And welcome to this December 7th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. We have gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer your questions. In the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls with me is Mac Guru Joel Brovelite. Joel, how's things?
Things is good.
Awesome. That's a little chilly out there, a little nippy, but we're getting ready to get into the holiday spirit.
Could be worse. Could be worse. It's 25.
Could be much worse.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. From the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre, Jeff Litterick joins us as well. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello, all.
How's your day?
It's a nice, fine, cold day here in Pierre.
Crisp. I like to call it crisp. Yes. Well, this is a listener interactive program. If you have a question, these guys and myself will try to provide that answer. If you still trust Facebook, that page is simply facebook.com/techradio. You may post your comments or questions there. Don't be shy. Send us a text, 956-STPB. That's 956-7372. Our phone number is 800-852-0214. Going to hit that one more time, 800-852-0214. 0214. If you'd like to talk to us, it's toll free. Twitter users, you can send those questions to me at KentSDPB. And of course, the email address inthemoment@sdpb.org gets us that email as well. I chuckle every time I say if you still trust Facebook, because it seems every 2 weeks there's more stuff piling on about Facebook. And in this last week, we've seen a flurry of releases of internal memos from the European governments that are out there exposing things, not good things. Facebook spying on their competitors and their app developers or their app folks with their VPN. What was the last stuff that was going on? All the memos that are getting released about the tracking organizations and things. And through the grapevine, you're hearing that Facebook employees are starting to talk to each other on burner phones now. So I don't know what's going on, but Jeff, will it consume itself? Will Facebook consume itself?
Well, you missed one of the rumors, and one of the rumors is there's a ton of Facebook employees calling their colleagues that have already left looking for new jobs. So, and the burner phone one is the other major rumor where the burner phones are being used to talk bad about the company, not to reporters or to other people, but between employees themselves, which is kind of weird that you think you would need a burner phone to talk to your coworker next door about the company. It kind of, if that's true, it's a level of paranoia we don't normally see. So, but they have some serious issues. There's actually some calls to replace Mark Zuckerberg and part of the executive team with new talent, kind of like what Uber did. There's a kind of a petition, a rumor going on that's happening. Doubt it will happen. Mark pretty much controls the company in terms of voting stock, but still, it's not a high morale workplace right now from all indications, and the fines, and it just keeps getting worse and worse. Not only were they tracking if you installed the app, they actually leaked emails came out showed how they got around notifying you when they updated the app earlier this year that it was going to record all your SMS and phone call records. They actually actively sought a way around the notification that would normally pop up and say, do you wish to give this app access to your phone call logs? So that users would not see that prompt up. You could opt out, but unless you knew about it, you couldn't turn that off. So, bad PR moves. The email chains inside even said, this is a bad move, but the growth group, which is the group was inside Facebook that's gained most of the criticism, which is basically the group that is looking to make Facebook bigger, get more users, stuff like that, basically overrode all that stuff. Even the frontline stuff about a month ago talked about the growth group and a lot of very ethics kind of things are not being looked at very well within the company. So time will tell, but it's not looking good, at least in the short term.
Is it really any cause for concern for the average Facebook user that needs to stay in touch with their kids, you know, as much as my kids still use it.
Yes, in that, and there's actually another one about how Facebook, there's a new study, can destroy democracy. In that, when they have that information, they sell it to everybody. That is a problem. And they have been talking about selling all this information they've been gathering, all your phone records, your SMS text records, and all that kind of stuff, and then creating shadow profiles to see who you're communicating with and who you're talking to in terms of trying to find new users and stuff. It all adds up into a kind of a database about you where you have no privacy at all, and you literally have no privacy online in any way. And employers could use that. The government can use that. Facebook most certainly is using it already. And if they sell it, you go in, well, I want to get a bank. They look up and say, nope, you posted this. You're denied. Because the banks could buy all your records. They could see everything you posted and track it. So, this has some serious implications down the road. And it's only going to get worse as these companies collect more data and start sharing and selling that data to anyone who wants it.
Has there been efforts to curb that the data collection? Are we going to see legislation?
In Europe, massively, not only collection, but who you can share that data with once you have it, and that the users must explicitly sign off. We've talked about this a few times, but the GDHP regulations coming out of Europe are all about that kind of stuff, data privacy. Europe, though, has always had more data privacy laws and stuff around their citizens than the United States has. You're starting to see a lot of pushback of this, and then this gets in. Like in China, Google's special search engine that monitors every search you make, and the government people can look up everything you do, that the Google employees are actually now actively saying, no, I don't. This company is not going to do this kind of stuff. There's almost, there's threats. They've actually walked out. There's been protests. Some of this kind of stuff is starting to look to happen at Facebook. So while in the U.S. there's not laws, other places have laws, and there's a lot of pushback from the actual employees of the companies in question about many of these practices starting to happen.
Some of the criticism I've seen online Facebook's potentially doing some really horrible things, but take a company like Amazon, they're not doing anything any better. Look at the Echo devices and things like that. And I guess it's the cynics that are saying they're doing exactly the same thing, and others are saying, no, they're not. They actually, it's hard to judge ethics right now.
I would say they're all doing the same thing. It's to the level they're taking it. Amazon, yes, they're going to record some conversation stuff. In fact, there's actually been a suit where the government is suing to get audio transcripts from a Echo device that happened during a time of a murder. So they're going to capture some of this stuff, but they're not capturing everything like Facebook is. Facebook is a totally different level of extreme. Where, remember, even if you've never been on Facebook, you've never been to the website, they have a profile about you. Through these shadow profiles and data brokers, because Facebook has been buying the data from Amazon, the data from Google, and pitting it into one humongous thing. So, and that's one of the things a lot of people start getting a little bit worried about, and why Congress is starting to investigate some of this stuff, is that if you've never been a Facebook customer, they still have a profile on you.
This troubles me. I'm going to have to do a little bit more research in us and see what can be done.
Frontline did a really good two-part. You can probably go online and do that, but they had a really good two-part, two-night kind of thing on Facebook's history and its current problems. And new stuff's still coming out this week that even, makes stuff worse. So,
ironically, you can go to our Facebook page and take a look at those links from a few weeks ago, or watch.stpb.org is where you can find basically all of the archived content of PBS and SDPB at your fingertips, and with the PBS app on your Roku device or Apple TV or your Kindle Fire Cube. I think they're calling it the Cube now, and Sticks. I think you can track those programs down, and they are well worth watching. I was completely shocked by the second episode, but the first was equally as interesting, I guess.
One thing I will point out, a lot of this stuff is kind of centered around the Messenger app. It's not so much, you know, your Facebook news feed and your Facebook, though they're collecting a lot of information. But what Facebook has been really doing is expanding the Messenger app to, like I said, collect all your call log records, all your SMS records, to record every conversation. In fact, they even talk to banks that if you use Messenger to do any kind of banking with a bank, that they would get all your financial information from the bank itself behind the scenes in the third-party data. Now, the banks told Facebook, no, we're not doing that. But that Facebook asked for all your financial checking, transactions, all that stuff behind the scenes for their profiles is worrying of itself. Luckily, the banks, like I said, told them. But a lot of this stuff is around that Messenger app and what you do with the Messenger app. So if you really want to protect yourself to a certain extent, make sure that the app's not even installed on any device and that you don't use a Messenger app, even though I've noticed more and more pages that will actually pop up automatically for business and stuff encouraging you to use it.
I see that as well. And boy, I've got some questions for you, I guess. We're going to take a quick break. I want to, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the Huawei news that's coming out and about that, but I think it directly ties into privacy and if there is a hope, I guess, of being able to go down the road of privacy or at least making the attempt to. But we'll delve into that, but we're going to take a quick break first. And welcome back to the second segment of In the Moment Tech Radio. We have Jeff Litterick from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications and Peer joining us, as well as Joel Brovelite. He's our Mac guru. And we're just starting to kind of get into the iceberg-y area of privacy today. Jeff, there's, you know, certainly big in the news is the CFO and daughter of the founder of Huawei was arrested in Canada. I guess it would be a couple days ago now. There's a, you know, nobody's really come out and said why, but the insinuation is that it's got to do either with sanctions on Iran, Iranian sanctions, or, you know, privacy of data because they're purportedly tied to the Chinese government and there's privacy issues with the devices. New Zealand, Austria have all blocked Huawei devices or the use of them due to security concerns.
There's two things. For the major one that she was arrested under was Iran sanctions, in that the company the U.S., for better or worse, imposes sanctions on Iran, and any company worldwide that does not abide by them is in violation, can be arrested if the United States and or is not allowed to sell any services and stuff in the United States. And what they found with Hawaii is they were trying to get around the sanctions and violating them. So when she flew to Canada, because the Chinese would not arrest her and extradite her to the U.S., but Canada will through our treaties, they arrested. The other part of that is, and this is true of any Chinese company, you must be aware in China, that by law, the Chinese government must have full access to all telecommunication devices. That means they have backdoors in every device sold in China. They gather information actively. If you try to block them from gathering information, and even on like online games and stuff, they have to have back doors that can monitor your time and stuff. And the Chinese government can get all that anytime they want. If you try to deny it, it's like a 20-year prison sentence in China. So, when you're in China, everything's being monitored by the government or can be monitored by the government for all telecommunications.
Now there are no Huawei phones in the U.S.
Right now. The big question is the stuff coming out of China, both networking devices and phones and all that kind of stuff, have the same back doors that are required in China? We know in China they have them. They have to have them, or they wouldn't be allowed to be sold in, and the company executives would be in prison. So the big question, and this is why a lot of this stuff has been banned, is are the foreign exports also having these same back doors and same access being allowed to Chinese government organizations?
Would that be easy to find, though, if you monitored the output of a phone, you know, like a lab situation or a...
You would think so, but it actually is it can be very incredibly hard depending on how well the back doors and stuff are constructed. Because there's a lot of ways, especially on phones, there's a lot of background traffic your apps have to use. And stuff can be hidden in those what they call side channels and side communication channels to send stuff out. So it depends on the level of they go to, but anything that communicates regularly is pretty easy to hide those kind of communications and make it look like it's just normal communications. If it's something like that's not usually sending out packets itself or sending out data itself, then it becomes much easier to detect why is this device that shouldn't be doing anything sending out data. But devices, especially phones and stuff, are designed to be constantly sending data and communicating. So it becomes much harder, though it's not impossible to detect it. And there's been certain cases of detection in different countries of different products of those kind of backdoor things being put in by the stuff. There's even articles where the Chinese government officials, and this is kind of weird because some of the companies are saying yes, some of the companies are saying no, where the Chinese government went into a company that manufactures motherboards, told everyone to leave for a day, and they put bugs in all the motherboards before they left the factory. Little chips to control remote, let them back in whenever they wanted in the future. And you have to remember, in China, the government can do that. If you try to stop them, the plant managers just get thrown in jail unless they cooperate. So that stuff has been reported to have happened numerous times already on exported products, where it's not even the company doing it. It's the Chinese government saying, hey, you're going to shut down for a day. We're going to go in and we're going to do this, and then you're going to ship these out. So
interesting.
It's a different environment over there, and it seems becoming on the civilian side, even in China, much more intense. In that, like a search engine like Google, to be in China, every user must be tracked and every search item must be recorded for the Chinese government.
So I'm assuming that on the security side of things, there is some sort of level of certification. If a government or an organization, a big tech company, wants to use equipment, is there a level of certification you can receive to just make sure that the device does only what it's supposed to be doing and doesn't call home or to any country?
There are different levels. Now, here's an interesting side bit. Most of these are through what we call encryption. Encrypting the data, though that doesn't prevent remote access and stuff and you stealing the data, but even encrypting the data at rest. So no matter, like on an iOS phone, even the data you put in your mail is encrypted on the device itself all the time. It's always encrypted. Australia just passed a law to block that and to weaken all encryption so that their government and their law enforcement entities can always decrypt the data from any device they seize or want. So that has an impact, right? Different countries' laws, which allow certain things, like in Australia, you can only now use, if it passes all the, I think it passed the parliament, I don't know if it's a law yet, that you can no longer use strong encryption on any of your devices. And then China has certain requirements that you must put the back door in. And then the United States, through the NSA and NSIT, have certain standards of devices, of encryption and security that we recommend people use and companies to use and stuff like that. And in some industries, to be able to sell to the federal government, you must meet these standards and these certifications. So and Europe has their own, and Europe is probably the strongest on the privacy side of all those restrictions and stuff. So it becomes kind of a mismatch, and you're starting to see slightly different versions of devices sold in different regions to meet all these conflicting requirements. So
interesting. Speaking of interesting things, when we were talking about Iranians, so there's this SamSam ransomware This is the one, if you remember Atlanta, being basically taken down by ransomware a while back. And there's also another attack in New Jersey that was linked to this Samsung, has now been linked to the Iranians.
So yeah, two Iranians, in fact, have been indicted.
Okay. So the question is, if Kent gets this ransomware on his machine and he pays the ransom, that's going to Iran, which is a sanctioned country for payments, right?
Right. At this point, they're not. They don't think Iran itself was behind this. Now, it's hard to prove one way or another.
They think
it was just Iranian hackers doing this, trying to make money. You know, just that was their job, right, to do this. And it's actually been linked to many hospitals, multiple state governments, different agencies and stuff across the nation. So city of Atlanta, it cost them millions of dollars to clean this up.
Did they actually pay the ransom, or did they do it the hard way?
Well, because they lost evidence, police evidence and stuff, I'm going to assume they did not pay the ransom because they lost a lot of data that was unrecoverable.
Okay.
They found out. So, and it cost them quite a bit of money to recover the data they could recover. So most likely not, but there's been known hospitals that have. There's three or four hospitals have publicly acknowledged they paid to get their data back, and so on. But in this case, it's just kind of funny because it is Iran, and Iran's kind of the news for lots of stuff. But it was probably more Iranian hackers looking to make a buck than it was a government-sponsored kind of thing. The government-sponsored would probably more want to steal the information than encrypt it and seal it off and make you pay for it.
That's true. And I'm probably guilty of just making the assumption that, yeah, okay, well, I'll know not to do that in the future.
But the two have been indicted in federal court, so if they ever go to a country, they can be arrested under treaty and extradited. That would happen, just like it happened to the head of the Chinese company in Canada. So.
Okay, well, just a quick programming note. The next show for Tech Radio will be the 28th. Normally, this will be the 21st. We have some special programming from NPR, but we will be back the 28th, and presumably we'll be taking your calls and questions on the devices you just got for Christmas and the holidays and don't really know what to do with it or how to hook it up. We're going to help you with that on the 28th of December. We'll be back with Tech Radio, so just keep that in mind. Joel, we haven't heard much from you today, so let's fix that.
Usually I'm talking too much anyway, so that works out well.
All right, well, we'll balance things out here. Some new apps are available today on for Apple
Watches?
Yeah,
there's a new Apple Watch update. The biggest thing with that update is if you've got the new Apple Watch, the version 4, which if you do, you just purchased in the past month or so, it implements the new ECG or electrocardiogram built in to that device, so it can check your heart health basically, and if you may be suffering a heart attack or something like that, it can warn you or it can call for help. It's actually a pretty impressive piece of technology, and it's actually been approved by the who approves that? It's FDA?
FDA, I believe. Yeah.
Approved by them. So
it's
the first, I think, software product for that that's been approved. So it's kind of a big deal, especially to those people. It's a big deal too. If you don't have that, there is still an update. One of the nicest features that received a little update, if you probably haven't even used, if you have an Apple Watch, but you should, is the new walkie-talkie feature. If you have FaceTime enabled on your phone or watch or both, and this works with the Apple Watch going back to the very first one, not the very first one, sorry, that's Series 1. There was actually a few months where there was a Series 0. So if you have one of the first in-line watches like I do, you can't use it. But anybody since, basically, can use the walkie-talkie feature. So you enable FaceTime on the device, and you kind of friend somebody that you want to, your your significant other, your child, your buddy, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just like you would expect, you know, press to talk and you send a, you know, hey, I'm over here in line. Where are you at? So no longer have to dial. If you don't want, use it like a walkie-talkie, press to talk. Pretty slick. And anybody with an Apple Watch basically can do that. So there are a few other, you know, under the hood updates in that new update, which I recommend you getting, even if you're not going to use either of these things, just because there's always some security updates coming along with it. So if you've got an Apple Watch, you know, and you're going to set it on the charging stand tonight, make sure you run the update.
There's recently some big iOS updates as well, correct, that people should be looking at?
There have been several updates, you know, in the past couple of months. We've talked about some of them, but, yeah, basically all of the Apple devices have had an update in the past month or two. And then, of course, there's a couple little, you know, .01 releases, you know, patches or security updates. So if you haven't really updated lately, I highly recommend you do it and just go ahead and set it to automatically update so you don't have to use your brain. I definitely recommend that.
Is this the new iPad?
This is not. No. Okay. I haven't. I will, but I haven't yet. I'm waiting for Christmas. Make sure I don't get one for Christmas.
Okay.
And then,
okay.
You know.
We'll want to talk about that.
Sure. Okay. I have used them, the new iPad. We talked about that, I think, the last show.
We did.
Or two shows ago, because I don't think it was at the last show.
Okay.
And, yeah, basically, all the new iPads have no button, which is anybody that's used one of the newer Apple phones is used to that. I think it's actually much better than having a button. Frankly, I go from my buttonless iPhone to an iPad with a button, and I keep wanting to do the same gestures. It seems like faster, and you know, you don't have to wait for the tactile button snap.
There's a certain farm girl that's been on the show before recently that just updated to the latest iPhone, mm-hmm. and swore she would never go with a buttonless iPhone,
uh-huh.
and has figured out the wrist action or whatever it takes to close apps or move things around, and is okay with that.
Yeah, it's way more intuitive than it seems like it would be. I honestly thought it was going to be more of a switch than it was, you know, when I switched, I think, the iPhone X about a year and a quarter ago was the very first version of that. And I thought, I was like, I'm not sure I'm going to like that, and definitely like it.
Yeah, I'm running into a situation like that right now that I'm not sure if we're going to like it, sort of technology update. And I think we're going to talk about that later in the show, though, but with a product that I'm thinking of purchasing. But it we're going to get to the point of, you know, how much do I ask my family to endure to stay on the front lines of technology? You know, is that it just because you can voice command things? Should you? I guess is my question. But that's to do with this button.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, as with any of these things, you know, there are always growing pains. And if you're, you know, the type of person who wants to try out new things, you know, I always roll it out to my family as, you know, we're just going to try it, just experiment, see how it works. And, you know, if you don't like it, don't use it. You know, I'm testing, you know, and, you know, there are several things that we've done that with, that, you know, we stopped doing, whether it's a voice command for lights or TV or play and pause on the DVR, that we don't do. And there are several things that are kind of integral, like intercom using our Amazon Echoes or, you know, turning on and off the lights with our phones, things like that. They're basically, I'm not sure my kid knows how to do it without a technological device. So, you know, there's a little give and take there.
So early adopting has gotten...
Yeah, I think it just depends on the type of person you are. Yeah, I mean, some things are a no-brainer, you know. I mean, there might be some people out there that, you know, here, walkie-talkie on my watch. Well, you know, I've been wanting that forever. And,
it's
you
a
know,
Dick Tracy gonna... function, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. I remember going into a Black Friday sale with my aunts and uncles, and they were bringing walkie-talkies along with them, you know, the kind that you would buy at Walmart for $20 or whatever.
Sure.
And, you know, I'm over here by the restroom. Can you go get in line for me using walkie-talkies? You know, that, I mean, I don't think that was even 10 years ago. So, you know, things move quickly.
Well, those will work if the phones go out, though.
Will they?
The walkie-talkies? Sure.
I don't know.
Little radio transmitters?
I can tell you my personal experiences. My phone is so much more reliable than things like a walkie-talkie or, you know, as a side note, I have a regular radio that you turn on and you tune in.
Mm-hmm.
I have an old-style one that I used forever. I never really noticed how crappy the reception was in a few places in my house until the internet went down. And of course I had to listen to radio. So I cracked out the radio and I'm like, wow, I can't hear it from in here. Or I've got to go to this. And it's not playing in every room in the house. And finally the internet comes up. I'm like, oh, thank God I can listen to the radio again.
And it sounds so much better.
So much better. Yeah, absolutely. Until it doesn't, but
that's the world's best kept secret is, if you listen to SDPB online, the fidelity is so much better than over the air because of the limitations of the transmitters and
you don't have to worry about static
mishmash of things that, well, there's reception problems as well. I'm just talking about, you know,
of course, quality of sound. Yeah,
what
absolutely.
Am I? What's the frequency range or frequency response?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
It's just so much better. So if you've got your whatever your device is, if you've got a Sonos and or even your phone plugged in or Bluetoothed into some sort of your fancy schmancy dodecaphonic stereo system, it's going to sound better coming off that device than it is coming out of your tuner.
Which
sounds counterintuitive, but it's not. It's basically the same reason that over-the-air television looks so much better than
of course, yeah. I mean, it's not because you want to send out less data, with the radio transmitter. It's just the limitations of the technology.
It's the limitations of the technology. We don't talk about those too much, do we, on this show?
Phones?
Limitations of technology.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Well, there aren't any, right?
Well, there are limitations, and one of those is we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're gonna talk a little bit about some holiday gift ideas, and we've got a couple little bit of Microsoft news to talk over with Jeff yet, but we'll get to that after this. We're back with the third and final segment of In the Moment Tech Radio. Joining me from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications and Peer, Jeff Litterick, and Matt Guru, Joel Brovelite is here to take your questions if you have any. Again, this is a listener interactive supported show. If you'd like to get a hold of us, Facebook has that page, facebook.com/techradio. You can post your comments, your questions there. Don't be shy. Our text number, 956-STPB, that's 956-7372. And Twitter users, you can send that to me, at KentSDPB. The email address, of course, is what a lot of folks prefer, and that's inthemoment@sdpb.org. We'll get us a quick note, and we'd love to talk about what you got going on today in the tech scene. I was just talking to Joel over the break that we were talking about reliability of things, and he pretty much schooled me on everything that can go wrong, from sunspots to driving in the wrong area or whatever. But I was mentioning to him that 35 million smartphone users in 11 countries were taken offline yesterday by a simple thing like an expired security certificate just made a whole bunch of equipment not work, and that made everybody's cell phones go and
for a little while hard to I mean
four did, hours yeah, in four some hours. Cases and overnight in a few others, but the thing is reliability and what are you going to do if your phone goes dead? And we don't have to worry normally we don't have to worry about that, you and I.
Well, I think most people, I mean, as far as phones going dead, I mean, that's almost a non-issue. I mean, if you use your phone for any period of time, you've got access to ways to plug it in, or you got a charger, or, you know, now you can hop into a convenience store and buy a pre-charged battery for $10.
But I mean, your cell signal goes out because somebody didn't renew their security certificate.
Sure. And I'm hoping you plan for that, too. You know, I mean, if you're going out into the middle of nowhere, I hope you have that sorted out. I mean, like I was saying in the break, people seem to forget all the things that went wrong with analog technology back in the day. You know, I remember my house being out a phone for like 11 days when I was a kid, And my mom and dad were freaking out without the phone, but it was 11 days before they came and fixed it, and it was just our house. And that doesn't happen all the time, but can you imagine 11 days without internet? You'd move.
I'm sure there are people that would go rent a hotel room.
Absolutely.
I'm sure there are. Huh. And then some people would think that's just going to be great.
Of course.
But yeah, that's interesting. It's good perspective. It does bring up the specter of you need to have a backup plan for a lot of the things that you do, whether that's, you know, I'm going to read a book, or, you know, if that's going to be okay, or, you know, you need to pack an extra set of fidget spinners in the
car for your kids
or whatever.
If your whole life is dependent on that device in your hand, you know, you've got problems that way beyond their internet being down. Although, again, in the past year, I can think of the internet being down on my phone a total of zero times. So,
Speaking of down, this is 5 years now that 5 years ago, Amazon promised us that we would be getting our packages delivered by drone 5 years ago, in 5 years. So we've hit that point, and I don't see any drones in the air.
Yeah, I think that has less to do with Amazon's technology and more to do with the limitations of laws in the United States, and I'm 100% convinced
probably just not ready for that.
Yeah, I just think you know, people and privacy has changed a lot, and what they're willing to give up and what they're you know, afraid of, frankly, has changed a lot. I don't think it's the technology. I mean, I'm not saying it would be super reliable or you'd want to have that done, but if you've seen, you know, any demonstration of the technology that's been available for a couple of years, they probably could have done it, but, you know, regulations being what they are, they probably it's safer to go slower, I think, certainly for them.
Yeah. So I alluded to Amazon earlier and me possibly purchasing a device this holiday season. Many listeners know that I'm a off-the-air TV reception person. Cut the cord years ago. Been fairly happy with the TiVo experience, especially skipping commercials with the button and you know, DVR, basically the over-the-air DVR functions. Mm-hmm. Lo and behold, Amazon's got a device out now. It's a fraction of the cost. It's got the same number of tuners, got a hard drive built in, all the things, plug my antenna into it. One of the main selling points of this device for them is the voice command. You talk to Alexa, change the channel, do this, record that.
Although I believe the new TiVo has that as well.
Does it? Yeah. So this is what I...
Yeah, basically, this is Amazon's device is a DVR for over the air plus Alexa, you know, plus the benefits of the Amazon Echo.
And what I fight with is this something that I foist upon my family? I'm sure you can always just use the remote. But I guess what I'm battling with is I don't know if I'm comfortable with doing that.
If you have an Amazon Echo and you have a TiVo, you can actually implement the app with the Amazon Echo, and you can voice control many of the commands on the TiVo device. Already. My family does that.
I didn't know that.
We turn our TV on and off and switch inputs all the time via voice at my house. That doesn't mean we don't go scrambling for a remote now and again, but it's really literally the only way we turn our TV on and off. So if you're afraid of it, I'm here to tell you, you'll be afraid of it for a total of a minute and a half until it works all the time.
Okay. Well, maybe this is something I can try now.
Absolutely. If you've got an Amazon Echo, if anybody out there has an Amazon Echo and a TiVo, implement the skill in the Amazon Echo, and you know, it's going to take a little getting used to you know, what command you're supposed to say. That's actually the biggest trick, as far as I can tell, with all of the skills, is, you know, the nomenclature. In what order do you say the words, and what do you remember? I think that's the biggest limitation with some of these voice command things, is, you know, everything takes a very specific voice command, and you don't remember which one it is. We have that problem at our house. We want to talk to the intercom downstairs, and we call it the downstairs bathroom if we want to talk to them. But my wife keeps thinking it's downstairs bath, because the upstairs is called bath. That's my fault, of course. So she can never get it right. And it's just simply order of words. I think it's human incompatibility. I don't think it has anything to do with the technology.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm going to have a hard time turning this thing off after a movie if I've had too many glasses of wine. If I have to remember.
Well, you can always use the remote.
This is going to make me think too much. I don't know. Well, that's interesting. I'm gonna have to try that. I did not know. How does it turn the TV on? Is it does it have a little RF burst thing in it? Or
oh yeah, I guess I should mention you also have to have. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that. You also have to have like a one of the what's the name? Logitech remotes, so that it can access that. There are that's not exactly true. Depending on your setup, you might not be able to do that, or may be able to do it. Depends on how you have it hooked up.
Okay.
So you're going to want to check the skill out. I do have the Logitech remote, which allows me to do that. But I think through networking, you can do it as well. But the TiVo doesn't actually use infrared. It actually uses RF, as you mentioned. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's going to be interesting. And I did note that they wanted you to place this cube somewhere near your sound bar and your Bluetooth sound system.
Yeah, because
system.
Some of it's going to use RF and some of it's going to use infrared, yeah.
Oh, infrared.
And some of it's going to use Bluetooth, of course. Yeah,
oh,
absolutely.
Oh, this is going to be a learning experience for me this Christmas.
Yeah, things are getting easier, though. I mean, I remember trying to set some of the stuff up 10 years ago. It was so complicated. Now, a lot of it is you just implement it and read the directions and follow them. You're pretty much good to go.
I have to agree with you there. And having just set up a few things, I read the manual first, which was a mistake, which was a lot of things I didn't need to do because I didn't have those problems. I just plugged one wire in, turned the thing on, and it worked. And it was if I had done less reading, I probably would have been okay. Ah, it's crazy. Well, we'll get back to that. I'll let you know how it goes, I guess, in a few weeks here on the 28th, and we'll go from there. Maybe we'll still be a TiVo house. Maybe we'll be switched over. Not sure right now. We're going to have to see how that's going to work out for us. Other news. Jeff, I wanted to talk to you. Edge browser is going to – they're not killing the Edge browser, but they're going to uncouple, I guess, the engine on that sucker and go Chromium. So are they finally giving up on that whole unnecessary operating system tied to browser sort of a thing?
Yes. The heart of any browser, and we really don't discuss this too much, is the engines. And there's actually a couple of different engines, usually a JavaScript engine, what they call a rendering engine, that actually displays the pages on your screen and stuff. And there have been really three major sets of engines. Is the set used by Firefox, Mozilla. There was a set Google developed. There was a set that WebKit developed, and that actually runs Apple Safari. And there was always and those were basically open source and intermixed for a long time. And then Microsoft always insisted on developing their own and pitting it in the OS itself, actually tying that engine deep into the OS. What they're doing now with Edge, at least, and they're actually going to bring Edge to Windows 7 and Windows 8 and stuff, is to pull out the guts, the engines, and replace them with what Chrome uses, so that the rendering engine and all that stuff, and we're not quite sure about the JavaScript engine, which one it's going to use, but it's basically tearing the guts out and replacing them with the Google open source engines for using their browser.
This is good news for us?
In some ways, yes. Some ways, no. When there were a lot of variety of browsers, the websites, and everyone really had to really follow the web standards and guidelines. Otherwise, websites wouldn't work across different browsers, right? Way back in the day when IE was the only browser, lots of websites wouldn't work in other browsers because they found tricks in IE that only worked in IE.
Specific code, yeah.
Nobody else could support. So having a variety, at least three major, four major ones, really helped the web standards accelerate to get to where we're at today and make the all the websites pretty much work under any browser. If everything just goes back to Chromium, well, then you might start having problems with Microsoft or Safari having problems on websites again, because everyone's just going to the majority web browser engine, which would be Google Chromium.
Which is why the Firefox folks are saying, hey, he should be coming to us. Well, certainly compatibility's gotten better, and I have enjoyed the race to, you know, faster speeds on browsers, because I benefit from that. And if this is going to make things work better, then great. But yeah, you're speaking specifically as a person that's in charge of a website for a business. That compatibility, having to test across more and more different browsers and things to make sure things look right or respond correctly or buttons work or, you know, things are displayed. This, you know, could be a better deal, I guess. One less oddball out there running around you just have to worry about one less thing.
And while Edge was actually pretty good, it was quite an oddball, even compared to IE. Kind of grew out of. So
yeah, interesting. Well, it just sort of came as a surprise to me. One last thing. We'll just mention. Have you heard of this relay theft? That's been going on where the thieves boost the signals off your car keys. If you've got the kind of a car that is the you don't have to put the key in. It's you just have the fob that you need to get close to the car.
Yep.
So they can pick that signal up out of your house and boost it and steal your car.
What it is like a repeater. If you ever have a big house and you put in wireless repeaters to extend your wireless signal, it's the same thing what they do. They put a device usually by your front door because most people put their keys by their front door.
Yeah.
It picks up the key fob signal and then they boost it to another device by the car, which then starts the car. And if you don't know this, once the car is started, they can get in and drive off. It's not going to turn itself off when it gets out of range of that key fob again. So people are highly recommend to store your key fobs not by your front door or any exterior wall, but to keep them someplace in the middle of the house so that that signal cannot be boosted and the car stolen.
Or use some sort of a blocking, you know, Faraday cage if you want to get really crazy, or they make key pouches now, or, you know, a metal box of some sort to keep it in. But yeah, certainly away from the front door if you've got that type of a device and you're worried about folks doing that. There's always people out there looking to make a buck somehow, and maybe they've gotten past stealing packages off your front step. I'm not sure. Maybe it's going to take your car.
Well, too many people are getting the video doorbells now, so this might be a safer thing for them to steal cars as well.
I am seeing a lot of those pop up on Facebook right now from package thieves. Can you identify this person? And, boy, in the smaller towns, it's sure easy to pick folks out because everybody knows everybody, don't they? Well, this is the time that we need to wrap up this show. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to thank my panelists today and remind you that SDPB is always there for you with our app or at sdpb.org. Go there and click on listen. Stay warm, everybody, and we will see you after Christmas.